The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. This morning, we are as close to you as your own home. So thank you for joining us this morning. I'm Reverend Larry Pierce, minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and I want to extend my welcome to you on behalf of our congregation. Whoever you are, wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, we welcome you. Whatever your gender or gender expression, we honor and welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you here to this place of an ever-expanding circle of love and compassion and justice. If you happen to be visiting us this morning for the first time, you'll notice that a link will appear in the chat box, and that chat box link will allow you to fill out a visitor form that gives us an opportunity to learn a little bit about you and also for you to get some information about our fellowship if you would like to request that. So you can fill that out at any time during the service. This morning, our service theme is weaving together the threads and the pieces of our lives. It's also the first annual Bring a Quilt to Church Sunday at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. So you'll see that some of us have brought a quilt, and we're going to share some of the stories very briefly of those quilts as we proceed in our service this morning. So I'm glad you could join us today for this and make a special effort today to stay through our postlude, which will be an original song that was composed and is sung by our own Christine Perry. So we've got an exciting service planned for today. Glad you could join us on this rainy day. At least it's rainy where I am. And maybe this service will bring more light into your own life, and you might feel the warmth of our own fellowship with one another. Our opening words this morning are from my friend, theologian, Reverend Rebecca Parker. Let us gather together, making a place of honesty where we commit to discover how to live among the ruins, how we might move among the ruins and find what can be saved. With our collective liberation in each of our hearts, let us gather up those materials we need to build and rebuild beloved community in our midst. In gathering this morning, may we be strengthened for what lies ahead. Gail Sayer will do our chalice lighting and reading this morning.
Today I light our chalice. And I will invite you to light your own chalice or candles following this reading. Now I prepare to also light these candles to celebrate the festival of Passover. As we journey together through life, may such flames as these light our ways and ever remind us to share the warmth of our hearts and the radiance of our inspirations. Now, please join me in saying the words in your order of service or on the screen as you now light your own chalice or candles. Let us bless the light as we gather together to kindle the festival candles. With light, let us bless life. And I wish you all a Chag Sameach, a happy Passover festival. Following the lighting of the peace lamp, we will have our gathering song, hymn number 128, For All That Is Our Life.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, and with all the people of the world.
Have a conversation through story. This is called Miriam's Cup. A Miriam's Cup is a new ritual in some Passover seders. A cup is placed on the seder table beside the cup of Elijah, which, as you may know, is filled with wine. Miriam's Cup is filled with water. Putting a Miriam's Cup on your table is a way of drawing attention to the importance of Miriam and the other women of the Exodus story. Women who have sometimes been overlooked, but about whom the Jewish tradition says, if it wasn't for the righteousness of women of that generation, we would not have been redeemed from Egypt. Miriam's cup also serves as a symbol of Miriam's well, which, as the story goes, was a source of water for the Israelites in the desert. There are many legends about Miriam's well. It is said to have been a magical source of water that followed the Israelites for 40 years because of the merit of Miriam. The waters of this well were said to be healing and sustaining. Thus, Miriam's cup is a symbol of all that sustains us through our own journeys. Miriam was the first to celebrate the crossing of the Red Sea. It says in the book of Exodus that Miriam took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and with dancing and singing to their victory. In some Passover seders today, Miriam's cup is passed around and each person fills the cup with water from their drinking glasses. This symbolizes that each of us has a role in reviving the stories that women have played among the Jewish people and in the world in bringing liberation. A blessing over the cup sometimes includes these words. Blessed are you, Holy One, who brings us from the narrows into the wilderness, sustains us with endless possibilities, and enables us to reach a new place. To recognize our own longing for healing and to celebrate our own journeys through the narrow, limiting places in our own lives and toward new possibilities, let us join in singing the chorus of Miriam's dance in this song. The words will appear on your screen, so please join in.
And the women dancing with their gymnasts. of unique variety. The tapestry she wove was one which sang our history. With every thread and every strand, she crafted her delight. A woman touched with spirit, she dances to our light. And the women dancing with their timbrels followed Miriam as she sang her song. Sing a song to the one whom we've exalted. Miriam and the women danced and danced the whole night long. The wonder of this miracle she soon came to believe. Whoever thought the sea would part with an outstretched hand, and we would pass the freedom and march to the promised land. And the women dancing with their timbrels followed Miriam as she sang her song. Sing a song to the one whom we've exalted. Miriam and the women danced and danced all night long.
Well, I don't know about you, but I imagined us dancing to that song, each in our own place this morning. Even though we're separate, I imagine us just do this with me. Just raise your hands out like this so that on the screen, it's as if you're joined hands with someone else. And let's just take that moment and feel like we are part of a dance. Great. Thank you. So our lives can sometimes feel like a grand or a crazy quilt. The odd pieces of our lives can come together in patterns of bright surprises. We may discover that we can have many beginnings and many endings. And like the pieces of a quilt, these various beginnings and endings can fit into a satisfying and creative whole. So in the Passover tradition, there is oftentimes the singing of a song, Dayenu, which has various translations, but it basically means it would have been enough, it would have been sufficient, it would have sufficed. And in singing that song, oftentimes it's all the various ways that the Jewish people have been blessed and throughout their journey in life are named. And it's like if it was only for our release from Egypt, that would have been enough. That would have been sufficient. If only had just split the sea for us, that would have been enough. If only he had just given us Shabbat, that would have been enough. And so it's a time to kind of reflect on what are some of those blessings that each of us have received in our own life. As we think about the quilt of our own life, however grand or crazy it may be, let's think about those sparkling threads that even those moments, those glistening, shining moments in our life, however few, even those would have been enough. So let's reflect on those, pause for a minute and reflect on those moments in our own life. And then after we've had a chance to reflect, you're invited to sing along Dayenu, which, you'll get it. We'll just join in the chorus. That's the only word you have to say is Dayenu. So let's pause and reflect on those shining, sparkly moments in our life. Just those would have been enough.
Ilu hotzi hotzi yanu hotzi yanu mi mitzrayim hotzi yanu mi mitzrayim Dayenu.
My sermon title is Weaving Together the Threads and Pieces of Our Lives. So when it comes to revisiting some of the traditional and the familiar stories that are told during this time of year, today, Passover, and next week, the stories of Easter, I have often said that you can never step into the same story twice. We change, the world around us changes from year to year, and this past year has certainly been the case. Even if we tried, we can't help but hear something new in the familiar stories for us this year. Everything has changed and shifted for us, and because of that, we hear what's familiar oftentimes in some different ways. Frankly, some religious teachers who try to extract the same meanings out of these stories may deafen us rather than awaken us. Conservatives and liberals, too, often take sacred text as literal, one to affirm those texts and the others to refute them. But both miss the point. The point is, and my point will be this morning, is to find yourself in the story. Experience the story as story. I have particularly appreciated the Rabbi Lawrence Kushner's advice to read sacred literature as if it were a dream. Don't our dreams often disclose something to us about ourselves? Don't dreams disclose something about something universal about what it means to be human or about life itself? So just as we sometimes do with dreams, we can linger with these stories. And in so doing, I think we can see and hear or sense something and bring something that may not be quite so conscious into our consciousness. We can allow the images, the plots, and the characters of these stories to listen in us, whatever it is that they do for us. So Rabbi Lawrence Kushner reminds us of Fritz Perls, the Gestalt psychotherapist's approach to dream work. Perls often said, "You are all the people in your dream, all the different parts. Any part in the dream is yourself. It's a projection of yourself." And so that'll be my approach this morning as I draw upon three characters in the Passover story. I want us to just experience these characters as possibly parts of ourselves as well. So first, of course, I need to set a little bit of the context. Jews remind each other that the Passover story needs to be told and retold in each generation. Not just because Jews should remember the stories of their own liberation from Egypt, where they've come from, but also we all need to tell these stories because each of us, Jew or non-Jew, must remind ourselves that in our own lives, we go through our own equivalent of a Egypt that we must escape from. Egypt in this dream of Passover is not just a place. It's a universal human condition. The Jewish teacher, Rabbi Yael Levy, reminds us that the word for Egypt in Hebrew is Mitzrayim, meaning narrow place. She writes, it is the narrow place. It is a place of the hardened heart and constricted perspective that walls off connection and relationship. It is a place of fear and anxiety and mistrust that makes it difficult to be compassionate, understanding, and generous. So now that includes all of us that escape from that constricted or narrow place that oftentimes occurs in our lives. And it includes all of us who happen to be breathing in this moment. And I hope that is all of us, yes, okay. So we all have those constricted narrow places in ourselves that we don't escape easily. So let me just illustrate from a recent example. Just this week, I was talking to a man in his 40s who reported that he and his wife will be fully vaccinated by the beginning of April. He went on to say that he and his wife had been invited by other friends to this outdoor party on Memorial Day with just a few friends in a big yard. And Memorial Day, the end of May. And just then I noticed a familiar sounding voice from him as he proceeded to say, I just don't know. I'm not sure I'll go. At that point, I gave him a virtual tap on the shoulder, which in these days means like a tap on the computer screen. And I couldn't help but point out, haven't you been bemoaning for over a year of not being able to go out to do the usual social things, to get a beer with friends? And in an instant, he realized what I was getting at. In an instant, he realized what I would call his mitzrayim, his own constricted perspective. He fessed up that the pandemic had actually given him a good excuse to not have to follow through with his actual aspirations to make more connections with people and to make more friends. And now with the excuse gone or dissipated, even with the conditions of his oppression, the pandemic dissipating, he was still up to his, too familiar way of thinking. Maybe not yet, maybe not now. Recognize anything familiar in this for yourself? Recognize that constraining thinking. It could sound something like, I want to, but I don't. Or if only this will change, then I'll go ahead and do this. Or, look, it's changed. Well, if only this would change, then I'll get around to doing it. Circular thinking that keeps us enslaved. Even when the opportunities of our aspirations arise, we sometimes find we get cold feet, we doubt ourselves, we hesitate, or I could say we stay on the shore of the equivalent Red Sea of our own lives, thinking about crossing, watching the familiar patterns of the waves slap against the shore, watching the reflections of the moonlight on the waters, and we still just camp out on this side of the Red Sea in the familiar, the safe, and the comfortable. So moving through our own Mitzrayim, our own narrow-minded, constricted places, our own Egypts can show up in seemingly minor ways like this guy or much larger ways. I'll let you choose your own example for yourself right now as I move through this reflection with you today. But there is some good news in this. Often when we look back upon our lives as a whole, we might recognize that there have been, as Rebecca Parker says, we have gathered up those materials that we need to build and to rebuild a life. As we look upon our lives as a whole, even if we look upon our own lives right now, it does feel like one way or another, we've created a grand and crazy quilt out of the odd pieces of our lives. Sometimes it may seem that this has all happened by circumstance, and sometimes it may seem like we've taken a direct route to our own promised lands, but most often it's been a circuitous route. There's been some grumbling and some backtracking along the way, But eventually a pattern can and often does emerge in our life. And we begin to see how everything fits together haphazardly, but sometimes forthrightly. That's where the three characters in the Passover story as a dream come in. These three characters can remind us of the parts of ourselves that have actually helped us to make sense out of no sense, meaning out of the scraps of the fabric of our lives. The first, of course, is Moses. I mean, you can't have a Passover without a Moses. As the story goes, or the dream of Passover story goes, Moses, who when he was minding his own business, was interrupted on his daily walk by this voice crying to him from a bush that was aflame, but not consumed by the flames. It may be like that for most of us. Something has to get our attention first before we actually pay attention. For Moses, it was the burning bush. And so, as it often happens in dreams, Moses starts actually talking with the burning bush, and the burning bush talks back. In Moses's case, the voice told him to stop hiding out as a sheep herder when you are meant to do so much greater things. The voice demanded that he step up and step out of his own inner, narrow, constricted view of himself and his role in the world. So after the voice kind of lays out the full job description to Moses, simple things like, I want you to go to the Pharaoh, tell the Pharaoh to let the Israelites who you've enslaved and you've depended upon for all of your grand construction projects and who you've depended upon as servants, I want you to tell, oh Pharaoh, to let my people go. It was then that Moses raised all kinds of objections. He tried to make his case that I'm not your guy. Moses said, well, I hear what you're saying, whoever you are, but you see, I can't really do this. I can't be a leader. I'm a stutterer. You see, this was before the year 2021 in the Common Era, when more and more people came to realize that a stutterer could be a leader. So back to our story. It's the same for us at those junctures in our own life when we are not sure if we should respond to what's asking us to step up or step forward. We have our own list of objections. Take a moment now and just make your own familiar, oh, too familiar list of objections for why you don't step forward, why you don't step up to those things that are calling you forth in your own life. We have our own inner critic. It might sound like some version of I'm not up to this, I'm not your gal, I'm not your guy. We have our own inner cynic. You know, even if I were to be able to do this, it won't ever amount to anything. I'll never be able to do this great thing. And then when we look back on our own lives, I suspect that we can see how we've sometimes pushed through that critic voice and that cynic voice. We've recognized how it cannot suspend our effort to become who it is that we're meant to be. We are able sometimes to leave the cul-de-sac of the voice of the critic and the voice of the cynic. Now, the voice in the bush that responded to Moses said, "No worries, I'll be there with you." Yeah, right, says Moses. Well, exactly, who should I say sent me? And the voice answers forthrightly and clearly. Here's where an accurate translation from the Hebrew helps, since we can then perhaps imagine experiencing this response to Moses as he might have experienced it. So who's sending me? Moses asks, and the voice replies by saying, I will be who I will be. Excuse me, says Moses. Could you say that like once more? The voice did not have to repeat itself, for it actually echoed within Moses. You see, the true translation, "I am who I am becoming," resonated within Moses in that moment. And like Moses, we don't often get to read the small print to what we've signed up for in this life when we decide to step up or to step forward. Moses didn't shake that burning bush down and demand too many of the particulars of what he was being asked to do. He didn't know about the plagues, the fickle Pharaoh, the wavering and the complaining Israelites. He didn't know that he would not actually live to go to the promised land. Yet he stepped up. And he dealt with whatever it was that emerged. Now, I'm no Moses, but when I signed up to serve this congregation as your part-time minister, I didn't know that it would mean that we would have to journey through a pandemic together, that we wouldn't see each other, mostly wouldn't be able to see each other for over a year, that I'd be preaching to an empty room and a screen on Sundays in my pajama bottoms. Just kidding. When we look at the grand or crazy quilt of our own lives, I suspect that we will each find moments like this when we stepped up, even without knowing all that it would entail for us. Have you had moments like that in your life where you just stepped up and whatever happened, you dealt with it as you went along? Those moments, even when we don't know and what's happening, or the moments ahead of us, even when we don't know what will be entailed. Those are the moments that we step into the open moment of our lives again and again. Those are the moments when we tire of using excuses and we enter into that process of becoming what it is that we are becoming. We step forward and we take what comes. Our lives are the result of our stepping forward in all the ways that we have. Now, our second character in this dream that we are interpreting called Passover is lesser known. He's called Nashon. After the 10 plagues shake down the Egyptians, after the Pharaoh says, okay, already go. So the Israelites go off on the journey, and then the Pharaoh changes his mind and the chase begins. So with the sea of reeds to the front of them and the Egyptian chariots to the rear of them, the Israelites were betwixt and between. And as the Midrash on this story says, all of the tribes of Israel hesitated at that shore of the sea of reeds. They said, we do not want to be the first to jump into the sea. And as the story goes, the seas did not part until someone took the first step. Nashon saw what was happening, and it was he that jumped into the sea. And just in that moment, as the story goes, the waters parted and the people followed Nashon's example. So what's familiar in this part of the story, the dream for you? We could wait and wait and wait forever, or we could, as Nashon did, risk stepping into the unknown, into the uncertain, and begin to recognize our life as it unfolds. We could dilly-dally on the shores of our lives just a little longer, maybe a day or more, a week, a month, years, or we could recognize that nothing will shift until we make a shift. So in the crazy quilt of our own lives, we know moments like this. In the grand and crazy quilt of this country's story, we have known moments like this. The social prophet Martin Luther King Jr. said it this way to that historical moment of his time. He said, "We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with a lost opportunity. The tide in the affairs of men does not remain in the flood. It ebbs We may cry out desperately for time to pause in her passage, but time is deaf to every plea and rushes on. We must move past indecision to action. Then he says, now let us begin. Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter and beautiful struggle for a new world. I believe that these words of Martin Luther King Jr. speak to this historical moment that we're in now as well. How many more senseless back-to-back shootings must this country experience before we say, no, enough already with your fictional interpretation of a phrase in the Second Amendment in the 18th century Constitution? There's a fierce urgency to now, if we can but hear it and respond to it. We are in a historical moment now. How many more laws must we allow to be furiously passed since the last election that attempt to limit and strategically block voting rights? How much more must we endure before we say, take your Jim Crow and cook it? There is a fierce urgency to now. Think about those times in your life and in your history when you dared to dive in, to take the first step, to venture forward, even if with no reassurance that the seas would part. Maybe you are in such a moment now. I know that as we reflect on the grand and crazy quilt of our own lives, that there have been moments like that in which we recognize that by taking the first step, the seas would part before us. Speaking of steps, that leads us to our third and our final character in this dream story of Passover, Miriam. As the story goes, after crossing the Red Sea, enduring the plagues, the uncertainty, the chaos, the chase, the fear, the anxiety, as soon as the prophet Miriam gets on the other side of the Sea of Reeds, she took a tambourine in her hand. She was prepared, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and with dancing and singing and celebrated their victory. And Miriam raised her voice in song. She sang with praise and might. We've just lived through a miracle. We're going to dance tonight. No one needed to tell Miriam or the women then that this was actually only the beginning of a long journey. Of course, they knew that. They knew that the steps ahead of them were going to be long, torturous, circuitous, and uncertain. Yet they celebrated anyway. And so too in our own lives, the crazy quilts of our own lives, do we need to wait? Do we actually need to wait until all is accomplished before we celebrate? The answer to that is no. If we waited until we've arrived, we probably would never celebrate. We need celebrations to encourage us, to fill us with spirit and with resilience. What can you celebrate now, even though it may not be fully accomplished? We tell the story of Passover in each generation because we know that liberation is not yet complete. It continues with us in each generation. Moses, Nashon, and Miriam are parts of ourselves. They remind us that within us, we have to cultivate stepping up when we'd rather hide out. Risk taking the first step and venturing forward because individually and collectively there is a fierce urgency to now. And we also need to celebrate even before everything is fully accomplished. As Unitarian Universalists, we're committed to embodying our faith, not just talking about it. And that's why we can reach out across time and generations and from generation to generation to join in Miriam's dance. For as the verses go, Miriam was a weaver of unique variety. The tapestry she wove was one which sang our history. With every strand and every thread, she crafted her delight. A woman touched with spirit, she dances towards the light. So let us join together on this day and say in a universal way, next year in Jerusalem, for we know whatever the current circumstances, we need to continue to hold out hope for that place of salam, that place of shalom, that place of peace and wholeness. Each step, each thread we weave or craft reminds us that it is a journey and a dance and a quilt that we are creating together. So, speaking of quilts, this morning, we've invited people to bring a quilt to church. And this is a great time to put yourself into gallery view, if you like, so that we can have a chance to view each other who have brought a quilt to church with them this morning, and allows us to see each other. And while the music is playing, we're going to just take a gallery view and look at what's here. And then I'll begin by sharing a brief story about my quilt. And so the music can play while people are arranging things for themselves. I'm going to move to gallery view just as you are. And then if you decide you'd like to say one or two, let's all do that with me. One, go ahead, one or two sentences about your quilt, okay? Then let's allow that time during just this time that we have with each other.
We are a patchwork quilt, many colors from many shores. We keep our own ways, but together we make so much more.
We are a patchwork quilt, many colors from many shores.
We many are.
Great. Thank you. It's wonderful to see you all like a quilt on the screen. I'm going to start by saying something about my quilt, a couple sentences. And if you have something to say, use the raise hand function in Zoom so that we have a lineup and our moderator can call upon you. So my quilt of sorts is made of recycled saris and that have been patched together by an organization in Bangladesh that's called the Sacred Sari Throws. And these are women and artisans who have been given a new chance in life, leaving limited economic opportunities that were available to them so that they can create these quilts and and soaps and other kinds of things. And so I remember those women in Bangladesh who found new life as I look at this particular quilt. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
All right. We'll go to Susan Hare next.
I mean, it's Larry.
my mother's a quilter. She, at times, our whole living room would be filled with big quilting frames. She did a lot of them. This reminds me that maybe it's time now for me to pass them on to her 9 grandchildren.
Next would be Linda Weaver.
I honor my mother with this quilt. This was her favorite quilt and on her bed when she passed away.
Thank you, Linda. Gina.
This quilt arrived in the mail about several weeks ago from a dear friend from my Vermont days. We were reconnected through a common friend. And she said, "While quilters are crazy people who take perfectly good cloth and cut it up and just re-sew it again."
Thank you, Gina. Preston.
This quilt was made by Linda's mother. It was the quilt she made when Linda acquired her first house.
Thank you, Preston. Gail?
This is a quilt that Matthew's great aunt, John's aunt, made to celebrate his adoption when he came into our lives almost 18 years ago. It's really special.
Thank you, Gail. Manny?
This is a knitted quilt that I made. I started it when Ryan was 6 months old and I finished it when he turned six. So it has lots of bits and bobs from old knitting projects and projects from friends. And it took me forever and now I get to enjoy it.
Thank you, Manny. Jerry.
This is actually an African blanket. It was my grandmother, Conchetta Caruso's wedding gift to me and my first wife. And I have a whole story behind it. Of course, I even wrote a poem about it, but notice that those jagged lines kind of reminds me all the ups and downs of life, that progress is never linear, and all these different colors blend and all these ups and downs and somehow form a pattern.
Thank you, Jerry. Amy.
Hi, I have three quilts and they are made out of the aprons, dresses, skirts, and blouses that my mother and her sister and their mother wore over 100 years ago. And they were pieced together. It's embroidered onto the quilt. They were pieced together by my great-grandmother, Luella Bringman, in the 1930s, and my grandmother, Belva Bringman, finished them in 1977 and gave one to each of us, me, my sister, and my mother.
Thank you, Amy. Anne.
I also have three quilts. The one I'm holding here, my mother-in-law made when my son was born, and it has dancing bunnies all over it. And the other two were made by my husband's Russian grandmother. And one has sailboats on that he had on his bed as a child and my son had on his bed as a child. And the other has flowers. He remembers her cursing in Russian.
Thank you, Anne. Christine.
Okay.
This is one of the many, many quilts that my late mother made for people in the family and people in the community. She gave one to each of her children when they got married. So this was on our bed for many, many years.
And we also have another one that she made behind us. And she also made little banners for different things like holidays. And this particular one has Allison. She made one for each of her grandchildren as they were born. And this was the one that has Allison's name.
Thank you, Perry's. Linda Stoffer.
Hi, this quilt in the background is one of many that my mom, Laura Stoffer, made. And this one was on my bed for many years as a kid.
Thank you, Linda. Mike Berkheimer.
Hello, this is a quilt made by my mother-in-law for my youngest. It's a Beatles quilt. There's Abbey Road. And there's lots of other things on it. It was made because I think I passed some of my music tastes to my children.
Thank you, Mike. And I guess I will be the final one. Behind me is a t-shirt quilt that Manny made out of many t-shirts that we love from our childhood that were so well loved they weren't really usable as apparel anymore. So they live on as a blanket.
Thank you all for sharing something from your home with us this morning. It was really great to see all those quilts and to see each of you. We're going to have matters of the heart, but because we've taken this kind of time this morning, I should say that let's try to be brief and maybe share a most significant joy or a most significant sorrow if you have one. And you can type that into the chat, and our chat chaplain will, Preston, will read those. And so try to be brief, and let's focus primarily on most significant ones since we've had a lot of time with each other this morning in sharing.
Bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will appear momentarily on the screen.
I'm now going to extinguish the chalice. And the closing words today, which I invite you to join in with me, the words will be on your screen. It's reading number 683 from our gray hymnal by Theodore Parker, Be Ours a Religion. Be ours a religion, which like sunshine goes everywhere. Its temple, all space, its shrine, the good heart, its creed, all truth, its ritual, works of love, its profession of faith, divine living.
Thank you.
And today's postlude is an original piece by our own Christine Perry.
Song in my book.